It is Saturday, May 6, 2006, 10:06 on the central coast of California. Today, we're going to talk about the Week in Geek, and then we're going to ask you for your comments and questions about technology, which we'll hopefully address.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.org. The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during our program are not necessarily those of KUSP. During the first half, we're doing Week in Geek. We're going to cover everything that's happened and anything that's interesting to us being geeks. And during the second half, we'll invite you to join the conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go right now to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us to get in our queue. And we'll answer that email through the radio. The glorious love of radio. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are three geeks. Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance. Hello, Drew.
Good morning, Lyle.
Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
Sean Cleveland, technical trainer, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Sorry about that. Hi, Sean.
Good morning, Lyle.
We're going to talk about geek news the week in geek, if you will, the entire first half of the show, and then we will invite people to call in with questions and comments about technology. So let's get started with that. Mr. Meyer, I believe you've got news up the wazoo, right?
I certainly have news. Let's see. We've been doing a couple shows recently on Blu-ray and double density CD-ROMs and DVDs that are coming out. And looks here like Sony had begun shipping 25 gigabyte single layer Blu-ray discs.
We covered that actually a week ago or so.
No, that was HD DVD.
Yeah.
Toshiba released the first drives.
The competing standard.
Okay,
so they're neck and neck as far as releasing products to the market and shipping them anyway. But the dual layer 50 gig capacity is delayed until June.
That's the dual layer Blu-ray 50 gig.
Correct. So you have a Blu-ray format with dual layer, which means twice as much density, which results in a 50 gigabyte CD or DVD.
Yummy.
Disc.
Yeah, I mean, almost all my photos on that. That would be really nice.
A pile. That's many, many movies in multiple languages and multiple soundtracks and multiple editors' cuts, etc.
And as we mentioned with these drives, we talk all the time that there's two camps, the HD DVDs and the Blu-ray DVDs, and mm-hmm. they compete with each other, and it's one of those situations where if you buy one of these discs and a player, that if you get the wrong player and the wrong disc, they don't match, you can't use it. Really frustrating. It's the Betamax VHS thing all over again. Any more information on that edge about this? Are we seeing one person winning yet? Or are we?
No, it's too early to. Okay. It's really too early to.
Oh, there's a rumor now that there was a new story last week on some of the trash sites,
which you love,
the tech trash sites, which I like
rags.
To go to. The rags. One of them is the Enquirer.net.
You're gonna imagine get sued, that, dude.
The Enquirer.net.
Let them sue me.
Is there a Globe.net too?
So. Yeah, you'd be surprised what they say on that site. You got to take it all with a grain of salt. But they're saying that Sony,
just like with GeekSpeak,
they're saying that Sony really doesn't care about whether the PlayStation 3 does well or not. It's kind of a vehicle to get Blu-ray out there. That's what they really care about.
To saturate the market with drives.
It's really important for Sony to get Blu-ray.
Care if PlayStation 3 goes out, just not for its own sake.
Right.
Yeah, strictly for the DVD drive in it. Well, it says here that. Where was it? Oops. Never mind. Oh, Scratch Guard. Jim Sherhart from PowerFile a couple of weeks back was talking about Scratch Guard, and I hadn't heard about that before, which is a coating that goes on the back of the CD, which keeps it virtually impervious to scratches or damages, and that's become a standard feature on Blu-ray.
That's
a good thing.
That's a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've lost a few CDs. When I first got them, I remember when I was a kid, and you pick them up and throw them around like, oh, this is no record, yay. And eventually they got scratched and they didn't work anymore, so this is cool.
When you were a kid and you got CDs?
Yeah.
Not DVDs.
My first CD-ROM, I think it was the Van Halen or the Scorpions, and I was like, whoa, rock on, dude, this is great.
Yeah.
That was North Idaho for you. Okay, back to news.
Too much information, I think.
Yeah.
Mr. Elam.
I didn't think I had news, but I did.
About 2 weeks ago, I started calling you guys by your last names. Like, we're some... this is a professional...
Yeah, whatever,
Mr. Troxel. Elam. So, Miles, yes.
So, there's been a battle, I talked about it briefly before, between the Open Document format and Microsoft Word format. And places, for example, like state of Massachusetts, were moving toward Open Document format so that they weren't dependent upon a single vendor for all of their city...
Word processing.
Or their state correspondences and memos and whatnot.
This is the basic idea that people are using Word documents as their de facto storage medium and used for processing, and you email Word documents around, but to use them, you basically have to have Word
Or a hack. Yeah, Microsoft had protested saying, but having this format means that we'd have to go through the extra trouble of trying to support it and getting import-output tools, and it's not really worth it to us, and trying to really turn the screws. Well, it turns out that... the folks behind OpenOffice did it for Microsoft. They wrote a plugin for Office so that it's part of the file save as, and it's Open Document format. It's been tested. It works across the entire field back to Office 97.
Fantastic.
See, is there something wrong at Microsoft, do you think? No, that's really interesting.
Yeah, Microsoft's saying, like, it's too hard. It wouldn't be possible. And yet, at the same time, someone's going, well, okay, here you go. It's done.
I think a couple weeks ago, Drew sent us all a little note about discussions inside Microsoft. Microsoft employees talking about Vista and different. And you can see that Microsoft's a major, really large corporation, and different segments that work on different applications have different feelings about the other people. You know, it's a real political kind of beast. And what you really saw was a lot of, you know, dislike from one group to another group, saying that they're failing or they're, you know, flailing. And Vista is an example of that, of course, because it keeps on being delayed. And the IE group is also, it looks like, not very well respected, but maybe it is. I don't know. In any case, that's got to be kind of a shock for the Office group to.
Well, for Microsoft, it's a big deal because Office is their cash cow.
Yeah.
Like, people buy Windows so they can run Office.
Yeah.
It's.
People buy Macintosh so they can run Office. I mean, really. I'd definitely like to see what Microsoft's response is to that. I'm sure they haven't made official response to that yet. But that's, of course, not their real reason, I'm assuming, to not go with OpenOffice format or OpenDoc format. The other reason, of course, would be that if you keep in the Microsoft proprietary format, it's still
then you
it's
have
still
to have Office,
cow.
Right?
Yeah, which is a good
thing. But if you have any format and any program can write to that format, then Microsoft loses that monopoly.
Can't OpenOffice actually read Word documents?
Yes, it can.
So how are they doing that, and why isn't everyone doing that? I mean, there's all these sites with...
Because you're never going to get something to be pixel perfect. Mm. Microsoft's formats, well, frankly, have a bunch of kludges in them, but at the same time, it works with Office. They've written it with that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft Office only has to worry about reading and writing Microsoft Office. So if it has some weird, you know, tick to the format, no big deal, because Microsoft Office just reads it. It's just part of the system. It's a lot of binary nonsense in there.
we'll stop there. Thank you very much, Miles. Sean, hi.
Hi.
You got news for us?
But do you think Microsoft will use it?
I think Microsoft will use it? No. It's a question of the end users, though, whether they will use it.
Yeah. So, I hope so.
Installing a plugin?
The question, though, is whether people will adopt it or not.
There's not a problem that this is really solving today for the people who use Word.
Well, for city governments, it is.
Wow.
Because if they lose their license to Microsoft Office, if they decide they don't want to pay anymore, then they lose access to these older formats. They lose access to all of their older documents.
Yeah, but the fear factor is so high. Why not just pay?
And the truth of the matter is...
assuming the municipalities have the money for
it. If the municipalities, though, don't have the money for it, they will get the money because all their documents are stuck in Word. So it's just a matter of Microsoft getting more money from them. It's really... of course, if legislation comes and Microsoft has to have that in there, and then somebody goes through and resaves all their documents to translate them to an open Word document.
Most of those computers are locked down, and you just can't install software on that.
And Microsoft has, like, what, $50, $60 billion in the bank. They're not going anywhere, but let's say in 20 years Microsoft goes away. Let's say they go out of business or something like that.
Just the idea
what happens to all those documents that you have?
And all of us have this, you know, we've been doing computing stuff for quite a while. We all have some data that's on some old format or some old media that we can't get to. It's kind of frustrating. And if that happened with Word documents, we were talking about a large loss of, you know, the human race's knowledge.
If that happens with Word documents, what happens if you run across an Office 95 document today? Or
you have
Word
to import
for Windows 2.0?
Sure.
Like, are you sure that you can open that today? And that's where the open document
you have to actually, some of these you have to like grab your Microsoft Office CDs and put them in and install all the extra stuff. Thank you, Miles, for that story. I'd like to go on. Sean.
So we've talked about carbon nanotech, basically carbon nanotubes before, and just how great they are for making things like, you know, better solar panels.
Everything under
efficient
the sun.
Efficient diodes,
sure.
You know, better, longer-lasting tennis balls and golf balls. I mean, they could be used for all kinds
of things. That's the most important thing, is get our sports power here.
They have very high tensile strength when put together. Maybe
space
stronger,
elevator.
Stronger steel.
Space
space elevator. But it turns out that they're more toxic in the lungs than asbestos.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And
so,
they're small enough you can't see them anyway?
Right. They're very small. And you can, people who are actually building carbon nanotubes could be putting themselves in danger. So there are people, there are centers or occupational safety and health are looking into this, but it turns out that the toxicity levels are the same as carbon black or even quartz on an equal weight basis. So that's kind of a problem.
Well, it's, I think it definitely is a problem right now. Carbon nanotubes are worth like, you know, 500 times more than gold in their weight. I mean, it's a very valuable substance. It's
very hard
to make. Hard
to make, yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of it like, oh, let's make some. Oh, some happened to got away in the atmosphere. No big deal. I think it's pretty well controlled.
Yeah, but moving forward, they plan on making a lot more of this. So.
Right, and as you see more stuff like tennis balls
and
made of them.
They're talking about using carbon nanotubes to help introduce drugs into people's bodies more effectively. Carbon nanotubes can be used to help people recover from injuries. Because and also they have antioxidant properties that enhance cell survival.
Oh no!
All kinds of interesting things.
Yeah. So, well, thank you for that. I'm glad keeping abreast of some of the negative possible side effects of new materials.
Lyle, was it you that was saying a couple of years ago you knew someone that was in carbon nanotech, and there was a question about whether it's safe or not, and the response from the person was, I don't know, but this is pushing the envelope. This may come up with something that revolutionizes how we live or extends life or makes our lives better.
Right.
So I'll take the risk.
Right.
Like, so
we
there are researchers that know that there may be potential risk, but they're doing it anyway because of the potential benefits.
Yeah, that's true. We actually had a guest on the show that was talking about the potential benefits of nanotech. I want to make a, I don't think I've ever done this on Geekspeak, kind of make an apology or something. What is that called on
a retraction?
Retraction, okay. A couple weeks ago, I mentioned we were talking about IE and getting Firefox instead of Internet Explorer, and I said, it's just a bad application. I think that IE is just a bad application was my quote. To some degree, I'm just going to stand by it. I'm not going to retract that at all. But but I do want to say that saying a bad application doesn't have real, I mean, it's not a qualitative thing. So let me just say that I don't like the security features of Internet Explorer. I don't like some of the things it does. And therefore, I personally don't use it. I use Firefox instead. But we had a caller from San Diego, or an emailer from San Diego, probably listening to our podcast, Sean, who said, this just turns me off because it is so easy to jump on the bandwagon to be against Microsoft. As a host or guest, host of the show, please try to be a bit more objective or to provide some reasonable arguments of why IE is bad and why Firefox is better. I use Firefox on Fedora 4 Core 64-bit Linux for work, and I find that it leaks memory tremendously. So he's basically saying that on Linux 64, Firefox is currently leaking, and therefore IE is better. Of course, IE doesn't run in Linux, so that's a strange thing to say. But in any case, do anybody want to back up my argument that Firefox is a bad, I mean, that Internet Explorer is a bad app? Should we put some truth behind that?
I actually think that most browsers are bad apps, but it's that, you know, you take whatever you can get. IE's security model, I completely agree with you, it's so complex to try to figure out how to set it up for individual sites that if it's so complex that people don't do it, so you end up being vulnerable. And then there's, so yes, I would go with you on that. Same time, I'd say Netscape 4 was far, far worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would say that I guess there is no really good browser, but there's worse, and IE is worse than is what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when it comes down to it, if I launch an Explorer, I find that I'm missing Firefox pretty regularly. I don't see any memory leaks on Firefox on Windows or on Macintosh.
Firefox does have a very, very aggressive cache, and this was introduced in Firefox 1.5 so that you could have fast forward and back behavior. Sure. So what people talk about in terms of a memory leak does actually exist within Firefox.
And what is that memory leak you're talking about? Instead of memory leak, you're actually talking about cache?
Except that it's just in a very aggressive cache.
Because a memory leak means the application never recovers from it. Firefox recovers. I mean, I run Firefox for months.
Well, Firefox does recover if you close the application. But while the application is open, it will continue to gather memory. That's what they refer to as a memory leak.
I don't consider that a memory leak. I consider that the pad on the application. Is there a top end?
Not to my knowledge.
Can you set that size?
That's bad design.
I don't believe there is. That's why people refer to it as a memory leak.
Okay, good. Thank you for clarifying that. Well, in any case, talk a little bit more about that. I'm sorry to say that IE just was a bad application. Internet Explorer, that is.
Maybe we should adopt the same perspective we have for Mac versus Windows, that there's good and bad for both, and you should try each one out. Whichever one you like better, that's the one you should use.
Well, if you can't get a Mac, then you can go with Windows.
No.
Well, we all know where you stand on that side of things.
I think when it comes down to getting viruses and ActiveX components being, you know, run automatically, I think it's just a better bet to use Firefox if you can.
So our recommendation would be Firefox?
Yeah, I think it's safe for us to keep recommending
that or Opera.
Or Opera.
Opera's a good browser, yes. Too.
I downloaded IE Beta 2.
Uh-huh.
IE 7
mm-hmm.
Beta 2.
And
I liked it. It's actually not bad. It's got tabs. I like the tab interface that at the top much, mm-hmm. much better. They've got some really interesting things, like you can click on next to the tab. You can click on a button that shows you all of your tab windows mm-hmm. on a page, like
That's
small
cool.
little windows, all of your, you know, all in your browser. And then you can actually quickly look at them and go to them.
Yeah.
They have a lot more, I think, advanced features. But then I went off and I tried to get it to work on JavaScript because I wanted like a print page.
Sure.
Launched a little JavaScript to open a print page. I wanted that to open in a new tab, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. But then I went back to Firefox and found an extension that not only allowed me to do that, but added all the
features,
the tab browser
Explorer,
features
sure.
that I wanted from IE 7.0. So,
yeah, interesting.
So Firefox is very extensible, and I think that's what makes it so popular.
However, I do have to say, when IE 7 comes out, I would recommend that people migrate from 6, like without even hesitating, because there are a lot of features added there, anti-phishing technology.
Sure.
So if you're going to use IE, when IE 7 comes out,
take it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's do some more news. Drew?
Okay, let's see. So cell phone hard drives. It looks like cell phones are getting bigger and bigger in terms of storage space and capacity. There's two, one from Samsung and one from Nokia. They're expensive. They're about $800. But the analysts are looking at this and saying that that's a trend. Hard drives and cell phones are a trend that's going to really cut into the MP3 player market because now your cell phone can do, in addition to voice, can do.
When you say hard drive, do you mean rotating disk?
Yeah. Even like the smallest hard drives that are out there are like the size of a SD RAM, a flash chip sort of a thing, and they have a teeny tiny platter in them. IBM and Hitachi put this thing together a while back. And they actually do spin, and they have a little head and a teeny tiny platter in there, and still a good way to do it. But it's fragile, and it's very high density. It's not as high density as a regular desktop drive, but it's much better in terms of capacity than a flash card.
The thing about these, I remember a friend of mine got one of these, and when I was holding it, I'm like, yeah, so this little tiny card, you take it and you toss it on a desk, and it's dead. I mean,
could be.
They're very fragile. But if it's in a cell phone, it seems a little safer because you don't normally drop your cell phone. Though, I see cell phones drop all the time.
Sure.
So it would concern me, especially when you're using a cell phone, it's pretty much on, you know, if you're listening to MP3, for example, the disc is spinning, so it's not parked, and you drop it. But maybe they're going to put in, sensing for high shock values.
I'm sure they will. But and the phones are still quite a bit larger than an MP3 player, just because you have to have a hard drive in there as well as it being a phone. So
why would they do this when you can get 2 gig flash drives?
You're talking like 80 gigs in a hard drive. This is a significant size.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, thank you. I wouldn't mind getting one for free, that's for sure. But I don't think I'd spend $800 for a hard drive for my phone.
It'll come to us all soon enough.
Sean, we'd like to handle a news story, sir.
Walmart's going to start selling computer components.
components.
I thought they already were.
They were selling PCs. Selling computers. They have a branded PC. Okay.
They've been selling media, blank media, stuff that you can find
and
at
full
stores.
Full computers. They've been selling full computers. So now they're selling components.
Yeah, now they're going to be start adding hard drives, adding cards, monitors, even processors.
Does that mean they're getting tech support shelves in the store?
That's not clear yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But you know, the tech support, not so much for computer components, it's for their branded computers. So
yeah, but if
they would have to have that now, I think.
If you go in and you buy a hard drive and then you go home and you don't have a 4-year-old to install it for you, it's hard to do. I mean, you need someone that has some geek knowledge, right? So then they're going to call back the store and
which
say,
which is why Walmart started the Geek Squad.
Walmart.
Best Buy has Geek Squad. Right. Fry's has their own windows where they help people. Yeah, maybe Walmart needs to have that too. This is only going to go into 1,200 of their 3,200 stores.
3,200 stores.
So, and I don't think you're going to see a Fry's level of components. You know, it's
right.
going to be...
Looks but like we'll be seeing a Fry's level of return policy. long line.
It looks like Walmart resells, installs Inc. as an internet setup and migration, some computer services companies, but I don't see any Walmart branded machines on their website. They're carrying Acer,
I've never heard of
HP,
a Walmart. Yeah.
Toshiba.
It's probably a white box.
Yeah.
That somebody else builds.
Distributing, was it Lindows?
Yeah, they had a distro. Exactly.
They were using, that was the big news, is that Walmart was going to be distributing this computer with Linux on it, pre-installed. Wow. To save money on the cost of the computer.
Sure. Well, they're into saving money.
I don't think they want the headaches of supporting it.
You go into like Santa Cruz Electronics, which is a local Santa Cruz. They underwrite the show, and you got the staff that knows what's going on. Oh, you still work there, right, Miles?
Yeah.
And they know what's going on. They know all the product they have and stuff, how it works. They'll help you install it.
Small shops.
Yeah, small shops like have this down. You go into Fry's and. I wouldn't.
Everyone's getting paid minimum wage, and they don't know anything.
And they don't have.
They know very little about.
But you know what? When I was in Tracy, when my parents still lived in Tracy, my father needed a new motherboard, and we went to the mall. No one carried motherboards. Best Buy was a smaller Best Buy. They didn't carry motherboards. They had a Walmart there. It would have been nice. We ended up driving to Stockton
to go to a Fry's.
Oh man!
You know, it's like an hour and a half of the day thrown away. Just to go pick up a motherboard.
That just means
city.
That it's an opportunity for some entrepreneur out there to set up
don't
a computer shop.
Don't you think there was a little computer shop around there you just didn't know about?
There was no VAR that could have sold
you. Or we didn't find any,
but,
no.
Yeah, Tracy's only existed as a city for like 5 years, so it probably didn't.
It's not true. Tracy's huge.
I know.
It's bigger than
Santa
Cruz.
It's just that when you go there, there's always like 20% larger houses and, you know, just always bigger.
It's more of a bedroom community, but they've got a big mall there and they had a lot of stores. I was really surprised, but, you know, this, I think it's just a portrait of middle America too, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of places, there's not a lot of computer stores out there. So
this whole week
helps people.
This whole week at UCSC, I've been launching the Digital Arts Festival, which goes on through the 14th of this month. And actually the student showcase is this weekend only. It opened last night. But some of the lectures that are going on, which are really fascinating if you're interested in digital art, we're talking about different countries having access to hardware sometimes, like computers and stuff. It's, you know, expanding. The world is getting smaller, and there's this whole debate. I think that discussion was titled "The World is Becoming Flatter," but about technology. But one of the things that some of these people that have been, some of these artists that have gone to these different countries and tried to do the work that they do here, they'll go and try to buy a software application and can't because the credit card's not accepted through that country, or that credit card's not in the system, so they can't go up to Amazon and buy stuff. So you get this, you know, the solution here is if you guys didn't want to drive an hour and a half, you could have waited a week until it got shipped to you, right? But only because our credit cards are accepted by the vendors. So the world is, the financial resources to make it kind of an open world, of course, is not exactly there.
Yeah.
And that's assuming, of course, people have enough money to buy the software and hardware that they need to do things with. So it's interesting that you, even in Tracy, had to
You
to
know
travel.
What, though? I had to buy a large power supply this week, and I ended up going to CompUSA, PC.
Were you in San Jose?
Yeah, in San Jose. You know, Fry's, went to a couple of Fry's, and some other store, I forget.
Now, what are you calling a large power supply?
Yeah, you know, 650, 700 watt.
What are you doing that for?
That's like a server box.
So, wait a second, he works for NVIDIA, he's not talking about what's going on, and he's buying large power supplies.
I had a hard time finding what I wanted. You know, I ended up going to Newegg.
You should have just bought 2 300 gig.
I could have bought the PC Power Cooling 1,000 kilowatt or 1 kilowatt.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, 1 kilowatt, 1,000.
Just waiting for the 1,000.
You know, $500 for a power supply.
210.
Wow.
And then the air conditioner to go along with it. Don't forget that.
Yeah. GeekSpeak is supported by Business of Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Our phone answer and fellow web geek, Rick Philman, awaits your call with questions or comments. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us.
Hey, we've got a... Oh, sorry.
I got more, dude. Oh, I'm going to just keep talking.
Roll it.
This program is supported by Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. This is Geek Speak. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Drew Meyer. You can join us right now, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Drew.
Oh, we just are getting some calls and some requests over the web. It looks here like Judy from Monterey. Mm-hmm. She loves listening to radio programs on her hard drive on her machine. She downloads them and listens to them later. She wants to know how what kind of a portable device she could take them with her. She could use to take them with her to listen to them later on. And she says she knows about iPods, but they're expensive. Is there something we can recommend that's an alternative? And that makes me think of the cell phone article we just talked about. iPods.
That's really expensive.
Yeah, but iPods are one of the examples of where there's a very, very tiny hard drive. Like the iPod Mini has an actual hard drive inside of it. So while that's beautiful, it is expensive, but it does have a significant amount of capacity. So the question here, or the answer for Judy, is how much storage do you actually need? How many programs do you want to take with you? How long are you going to listen to them? If you're going on a road trip, you might want more storage capacity, and an iPod might make more sense. But you could just get a regular MP3 player, which has, I don't know, what, a couple hundred megabytes at the most in it.
Yeah.
And you could store a couple of programs.
But you know what? I've got a 4-gig iRiver.
Uh-huh.
And it's nice to have all of that music and audiobooks. I don't even use, maybe I've used 2/3 of it, maybe. And I don't know if you really need that much space.
4 gigs?
Yeah, four gigs.
If you're disciplined about cycling
no,
stuff.
No, 40 gigs.
40.
It's a lot of, that's a lot of space. If you get a smaller player and you connect it to your computer quite a bit, you can fit a lot of songs on that. I don't know, really know if you need to spend a lot of money on something.
I'm just waiting 10 years from now to play back this recording. 40 gigs ought to be enough for everyone.
Yeah, right.
We all know better now. And so your iRiver was more than $100, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 4 times or more.
Okay. So maybe those are some ideas that'll help you out, Judy.
Well, I want to say that I have an iPod, and the solution for expensive iPods is you get your friend Miles to buy you one for your birthday. I recommend it highly.
okay, you know, now the phone's going to ring off the hook for Miles.
Miles is single, actually, and I bet if you entered into a relationship with him, probably women only, I bet after a while he'd help you out.
How uncalled for is that?
Or anything.
Jeez.
Unfortunately, he's got a busy schedule, so he's not around much. I am doing my best to try to
find... See, this is what happens when you are the single guy.
Oh, look, I panned him out. Oh, sorry.
Oh, God.
So you're saying a single guy? Go on.
A single guy in the group full of... Everyone else is married of the geeks that are in the area.
Believe it or
on
not.
A regular basis. And I'm constantly getting this. This is...
Why do people marry us? I don't understand.
It's a mystery to me.
So Dee Dee says that she loves her Shuffle.
Which is iPod Shuffle. Yeah.
And she puts her documents on it and lots of podcasts. So that's something
And that's, worth. That's about $100, I believe.
I think it's just a little over, but yeah. It's a superb product. We have one as well, and it holds enough stuff, and it's very, very portable, and it's the design is elegant, and it's graceful to use.
You know what's the worst thing in the world is I get
getting heckled about you being single? Yeah.
I get emails all the time from PR companies that are pushing products of certain types, and sometimes I go, that looks like an interesting product. Send me a demo of it, and I'll talk about it on the air and write up an article, which I never do. But I always talk. I try to talk about it on air. And one thing I got was this great little MP3 player that works in a cigarette lighter, and it plays from from USB sticks, and it's great. And I don't know the name of it, so I'm going to mention it a little bit later. I'm going to try to research this as we take calls, and hopefully we won't sound too horrible. All right, I'm going to go ahead and start taking calls actually, because we've got some in the queue. And if you'd like to call in, I'm sure there's phone lines available. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. And you know what, you guys? I can't see Rick, so I don't know who's actually on the line. You guys know?
We've got line one is Al in Felton.
Al in Felton, great.
I think, if
okay,
we get it.
Okay, let's try it. Okay, Al, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I had a question about when you guys point towards Firefox and Thunderbird, there's actually two variations on it. There's the Mozilla Suite, and then there's the standalone versions of Firefox and Thunderbird. And they are very much different.
Yes.
And wondering if you know anything about the history, because I find that there's capabilities on the suite side. It's more predictable, but you cannot add extensions to it, to my knowledge. And you can't customize it. And it does a few things that the standalones do not do that I particularly need, but I would love to have those capabilities translated over. And they both leak memory like crazy. But, you know, you live with it. It's not that big a deal.
Right, they're actually using much the same technology. The Mozilla Suite was what first came about, and it was the successor to the Netscape 4 era of the communicator suite, which is the web browser, the email client.
IRC chat, HTML editing.
Right, things like, Composer. And so the suite just went along with that. But what people were finding was that it was using up too much memory. It had a bunch of features they weren't using. And so what was done was splitting off. First, it was the browser splitting off so that Firefox was just this browser that had the bare essentials to it, or comparatively so, and that you would have extensions that you would add in whatever you needed, as opposed to giving everything in the kitchen sink all at once, which is what the Mozilla suite was trying to do.
And they took the mail client and put it off on its own, called it Thunderbird.
Right, after Firefox worked out and people adopted it en masse, loving it, that they did the same thing with Thunderbird. And they're looking to do the same thing with the editing component. There's actually a thing called NVU.
What is NVU?
NVU is the Mozilla product?
NVU, sorry.
NVU?
Right.
Got it.
NVU, or .org is the website for that, I believe. And that is not the Mozilla Foundation, but it's still using the same technology. It's effectively the same thing.
Right.
I don't see it on...
Oh, sorry, NVU.com, perhaps?
Let me check that.
Well, we'll get back to that. So, what are you... Are you switching between them? Do you like both of them, or what's your...
I run both simultaneously now. The thing is, I was on the Mozilla suite for the longest time because it does two critical things that I need.
Which is?
On any normal machine that uses your personal machine, you're building up huge hierarchies that effectively represent almost your mind. You've got your email hierarchy, your bookmark hierarchy, and your storage hierarchy. And what I do is, with the Mozilla suite, what you can do is you go to a web page, and you have the send page function. And that pops up a little email to yourself, and it actually will mail the HTML to yourself. This takes 2 button clicks. It's extremely fast and automatic, and it preserves the contents of the page, even if the people who support it go out of business. And this is really critical if you have to find, you know, critical phone numbers or contact information. So what you do is you use your email directories as a massive storage hierarchy to basically store everything you have. You eliminate your bookmarks, you have virtually none of them. And you do everything through email. It's just...
So you just email your bookmarks to yourself?
Yes. And the suite allows you to do that, and it's very efficient. It makes two big hierarchies out of one. And
this is one of those things that's great. It's like, it's not... not everybody does that, but since you do that, you like the application.
There may be a Firefox extension
that allows you to do that.
Adds this capability.
There's a bug fix, and there's 12 people who are interested in it. The vote count on this kind of much implies that it isn't going to happen.
Right.
So within Firefox, going to File, Send Link doesn't work?
Well, you have to... The email pops up, then you have to basically copy and paste the URL into the email as an attachment and then send it. This is about 5 to 10 mouse clicks, and it drags you down. I mean, it used to be so automatic that you weren't even conscious of doing it. The amount of work it takes to do it now is so high that I always go back to the Mozilla suite. I also found serious bugs in Thunderbird, and I've had to retreat back to the Mozilla suite in order to get around them. So it's unfortunate. I tried to get to Firefox and Thunderbird and got pulled back. Now I only use Firefox because the tab browsing and downloading features are so great, I use it But I'll transfer URLs from the suite into Firefox in order to do them, so I keep two browsers up at all times.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've wondered for a while why the Mozilla Foundation is still doing the suite, the Mozilla suite, because right. I always recommend the Firefox and the browser and Thunderbird independently. Mm-hmm. So that's the answer, is because some people like the whole thing in one big app. Thanks for informing us a little bit about how you use it, and good luck on that bug fix being rated a little higher. I'll add a vote for it.
I'd
just
appreciate
so,
it.
Just so that you switch over to Firefox, that'd be kind of, the Thunderbird Firefox.
Yeah, so
version.
Firefox, Miles and I were just playing with it, and if you go to File, Send Link.
It does what he's suggesting.
Mm-hmm, it does.
Well, what it doesn't do, unless you put the web page as an attachment, okay? It only sends the link, not the top-level HTML. And if the page goes out of business...
That's what you're doing, you're
caching. You're looking for archiving.
Okay. Gotcha.
I'm caching the whole net, and this means every page I've ever been interested in. My email files are measured in gigabytes.
Right. Well, it's an interesting choice. Have you heard of the Wayback Machine?
The Wayback Machine?
Yeah.
Archive.org.
If you go to archive.org... and Drew, we should add this to the site too. Archive.org has a thing called the Wayback Machine, and it's a cache of the internet going back to 97, I think.
97.
And you can look at web pages at certain pages. Now, it's not a guarantee that all content will be there, but it's kind of an interesting thing to play with. It's kind of like what your email looks like, but it's probably terabytes and terabytes of data rather than gigabytes of email. It's an interesting paradigm that you're doing. Be careful and back it up, because it's a lot of data.
You bet I do, but the thing is, I'm tend to be cynical, and I think that the current process of privatizing the net, there's a lot of push out there. I'm expecting that it's going to be pretty turbulent in the next 10 years as to what you'll be able to get to and what you won't.
All right, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, Shelby Graham, who actually manages the Cezanne Gallery at Porter, just called in to say, you know, Lyle, if you're going to mention this wonderful festival that's happening, mention the hours and location of the festival. So I will do that. First off, you can go to the geekspeak.org site and look at last week's show, where I have links and such to the entire gallery, but entire event. But the Cezanne Gallery, which is at Porter College at UCSC, has hours today and tomorrow, and I am desperately trying to find that information on the actual hours. I'll get to it in a few minutes, but it's at Porter College, and it's open today and tomorrow, and you can see the student work there. Really some quite interesting work. I think I've talked about the Metavid project before, which is a C-SPAN archive, allows you to look through C-SPAN's archive of content. Two of the Danham students have worked on that, and there's a whole bunch of interesting art pieces with digital arts and new media, all happening at the Cezanne Porter Gallery, and I think that's Cezanne. Well, I'll look it up and tell you in just a second. And since I just promised that a minute ago, let me do this now and talk about the Rodemaster FM modulators. So a while ago, I got contacted about Rodemaster, which I believe that their website is Rodemaster FM. We can get to it from geekspeak.org. In any case, they have these little, they look like power adapters that plug into your car lighter jack, cigarette lighter. I guess that's what it's really for, right? It's this little white box or black box that plugs in there, and it's an FM transmitter, so it transmits to your stereo, and you can plug an analog line into it. So if you have an MP3 player already, you can take your MP3 player and plug it in and play it, and it broadcasts to a certain FM frequency. Don't pick 88.9 or any of KOSP stations, because you wouldn't want to miss us. And then your car stereo picks that signal up, and you can play it through your car stereo. It's a very common way of playing MP3 players.
It doesn't really work
on
my Prius, though.
Because your antenna's on the roof. So
in the very back of the car.
Right. This thing might. We should try this one in your car. But the other thing it has is a USB port for flash drives. So you throw MP3s on flash drives. Now, these little USB flash, what are they called? Gum sticks? What are they?
Thumb drives.
Thumb drives. These little flash thumb drives. I think I have one in my pocket.
Miles has one around his neck.
Yeah, he has one around his neck.
Which I highly recommend, Miles. Why do you love your drive so much?
Let's talk about that in a second. Okay. You take these little drives, you put MP3 files on them, and you plug them into this little Rodemaster transmitter, and it plays the MP3s. It's got to play and pause and stop. So it's really kind of neat, because you can use multiple of these thumb drives.
That is neat.
And these thumb drives, I don't know, the geeks seem to have a lot of these things laying around, smaller ones, 32 megs and 64 megs that we don't really use.
Do not get make sure it's USB 2.0.
But even USB 1.0 for MP3 playing.
Away.
No, MP3
for
playing, it would be fine.
For your car, it'd be fine. Yeah.
It's just the copying the MP3s on it.
But
will
if,
take
it's only,
you a long time.
If it's only 8 megs,
big, yeah.
You know. I mean, you can get a Geek Speak show on a 7 meg drive, so That's a thing to do right there.
That's true.
So in any case, it's pretty nice. The one thing that I tried that didn't work is actually charging a USB device off of that USB port. It actually drained my iPod, which is kind of a bummer. But they're kind of earlier adapters. So you can look on their website. Their website is roadmasterusa.com for an inexpensive MP3 player, which has kind of interesting features. Okay, Miles, your USB fob around your neck. Why is it so neat?
Oh, it's just because it's fast.
Sean, it's very fast. Yeah.
That, and it makes a wonderful fashion statement when you have it dangling around your neck. You know, it's this nice little black anodized.
Anyway. Girls dig it.
That's right. Something about that in chicks, huh?
See, this is what I have to put up with. When we're not on the air, this is what I'm hearing all the time. So,
Wait. Who was giving me just grief about my little girl? And let's not go there.
Anyway, let's not go there.
So, I think the way you should go with this is, yeah, those little USB devices, make sure it's USB 2.0, and don't store really critical files on it, because those things are known to fail, especially if you wear it around your neck all the time, and you bend over to wash your hands, and it gets dunked in the water. That would be bad.
Although I have one that is rubberized that I actually put into a washing machine, and it worked.
It
went fine.
See, I have a ton of those, and I just pulled one out recently, a 32 meg. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just to copy some drivers on it quickly. You know, 14 minutes later, you know, I had the 10 meg file copied.
Yeah, they're slow.
So they're really slow.
I want to mention
that USB 2 is not.
Mary Porter Cessnon Gallery, which currently has Danham students in the program of my day job, showing their work, some really impressive work, is open today from 12 to 5 at UCSC. And it's also open tomorrow. I know they've got extra staff to come in, but I don't have the hours, but I would guess 12 to 5. So 12 to 5 today, and of course you can go to geekspeak.org and click on today's show to find the site link that actually has the phone numbers. You can call the gallery, but here's the phone numbers in case you want to call them right now. Get ready. 831-459-3606. But you might want to wait till 12 when there's actually people there. Okay, so have we gotten back to everything we're supposed to get back to? Can I take the next call? Yes?
Go for it.
All right. Hal has been very patient from Aptos. Welcome, Hal, to GeekSpeak.
Yes, hi. It was either last week or the week before when you guys were strongly recommending Firefox that I went ahead and downloaded and installed it again. I had used it before, but for some reason abandoned it. And it's working fine, except when it takes me to a PDF file, it won't open the PDF in Firefox. I've got the purchased version of Acrobat, of Adobe's Acrobat, and so when I downloaded the suite, I said no to download the Acrobat that comes with the Firefox package. And I guess I should say, in light of the call before, I don't know if I downloaded the Mozilla suite or the Firefox suite. I didn't realize there was a difference.
But you downloaded Firefox, not the suite.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, doing some quick Google searching, what I'm assuming is going on is that Miles, you got a guess for this? You know, application building.
Well, there's a plugin for loading up Acrobat within the browser, and that is just a plugin. It's not the actual full application, so it should work with what you have. I know that there's also an extension for choosing how you display PDFs, whether you're just downloading them, viewing them within the browser, or viewing them as a separate app, but I don't have any specific info about it, but I know there is a PDF extension or two up on Mozilla's Firefox site.
So what should I do now?
So go to mozilla.org and click on Firefox, and there'll be a thing called extensions, or are they called extensions or plugins?
Extensions.
And in there, there's going to be a PDF viewer, and you just download it.
But I don't want to use that if I can use the one I purchased, because then I can
edit.
You know.
Wait.
Exactly.
You purchased an Adobe product?
Right.
He purchased the full Adobe.
Adobe Reader.
Adobe. Oh, no, not Reader. Acrobat.
I mean Acrobat. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
So do you normally edit your PDF documents?
Yeah,
through
exactly.
Your browser?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You edit them inside the browser with the Adobe Reader.
Wait, hold on.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's
download the file as a PDF extension.
He doesn't download them.
But how does he put them into Reader then?
He doesn't put them in Reader.
How do you edit
Okay,
them?
Okay, so he's using Acrobat. Reader's not an editor. Wait a second.
Sorry, Acrobat.
So the thing that's going on is in Internet Explorer, when he has the Acrobat suite installed, the Acrobat application installed, and he views a PDF, it shows up in his browser with all the editing tools and features
Correct.
In there.
It does that with Firefox.
Acrobat integrates.
And it does that with Firefox, is what Sean is saying. So my guess, which I think Sean's confirming, is that you need to install
the full version again Acrobat.
After installing Firefox, because it's not showing up for him right now in Firefox. It's just downloading them.
So Firefox doesn't know that he actually has Acrobat installed.
Those Acrobat extensions have not been installed.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, so.
So what extensions does he need to get to be able to use the Acrobat full suite, not the reader, but the editing feature in Firefox? How do you get
it to
work?
I would go to Adobe's website and check their help pages about adding support for new installed browsers.
Because the other thing you could do, of course, is just reinstall Acrobat, which you have.
Okay.
And that would probably fix the problem because it's going to detect the browsers you have and install the plugins it needs.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't remove it. Just
go through the install.
It would be a modify.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. See, that's the one thing about making recommendation online, you know, or on air. People listen to us and then they do it and then they get problems and then we're responsible.
Actually, we're not that responsible.
Well, no, I'm not particularly responsible.
We just make that stuff up and say it, whatever feels good in the day.
So I'm responsible?
Just go to geekspeak.org and drop us an email if you run into problems.
That's true, yeah, definitely. You know, Drew, I get recognized sometimes. My voice gets recognized sometimes when I'm in like coffee shops. I don't want someone to turn around and go, "You messed up my computer. I can't use Acrobat anymore."
You know, you get what you pay for. Everybody wants something these days.
Yeah, but Lyle, you would then say, "Well, what can I do to help you? Let's go to your house right now and I'll fix it."
Oh, man, I am a sucker. We can take another call if you'd like to call in with questions or comments
about technology. Like the car talk guy, say, write your question on a $20 bill and send it to KUSB.
476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. The lines are open. We can take another call or two with questions or comments. We'll try to answer it correctly without messing your life up even more than it is about technology. Again, the phone number is 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Sean, you look like you have a question.
So next week is E3.
What is E3,
right.
Sean?
Now, is E3 going to be done in time for us to talk about on GeekSpeak?
So we are sending our New York
correspondent to Los Angeles.
Yeah, correspondent Dee Dee to Los Angeles to cover E3. So she is actually going there on behalf of GeekSpeak to check out all things cool in the world of gaming.
I think it's really funny that all of us geeks are in California. All the geeks besides Dee Dee are actually in California. And we're sending our New York correspondent to
California. Makes sense.
Yeah. Sure.
So E3 is the world's largest computer gaming expo. Not just computers, but consoles as well. So she'll be covering what's coming out with PlayStation 3. Hopefully something will be there about that. Xbox 360.
And it's good that
Nintendo, I'm guessing there will be massive amounts of news about Nintendo, just because Dee Dee likes Nintendo.
it
should be a good show, yeah.
It's good that we're sending Dee Dee too, because of all of us, she's the hippest of them. See, I just used the word hip. Therefore,
she likes everything, so yeah. I think if you sent me, you'd be getting a great report on war games. You know,
graphics cards.
So,
what if we sent Miles?
If you sent me, you'd just get static. I don't understand any of this stuff.
Miles would be bored because he just likes nostalgic retro games that don't use any graphics hardware whatsoever.
Atari.
I'd have a whole bunch of photos, but nothing to say.
So it makes all sense right. That we're sending Dee Dee.
I'd be saying, like, there's nothing out there for Linux. It's crap.
So we won't have a report next Saturday, but the Saturday after that, I really hope we can get Dee Dee on and talk about what she saw. It'd be really cool.
Now, Dee Dee also sent in a thing about MyWeb 2.0, Yahoo's thing, on that allows you to cache bookmarks. So it's an internet-based thing. You give it a URL. It actually caches the entire page of that URL and saves it on some hosted site. It's at mag.noli.a. That can't be right. That just looks that URL looks like fake. So I guess I don't have all the information on that.
The Magnolia?
Is it Magnolia? And then A, is it a root domain name? A can't be a root domain. Is that just the name of it?
Yeah, Magnolia Cache? I absolutely
don't know anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dee Dee's going to send us an email, and then Drew will put it on the site. Gosh, that's so cool. Okay, we do have a call from Molly of Carmel. What do we know about AT&T and large companies and commercialization, two-tier internet, and charges that differ at each search level?
Do you guys understand that question?
We covered that last week, actually. Okay. Yeah. Miles?
It's the two-tier paying more to make sure that your content is accessible to your individual users of an ISP.
It's class on the internet.
Right. And from what I've been hearing, the legislation has been getting, has not been gaining much ground, has actually been faltering. So for the time being, there is only a single tier for the internet. Everyone is equal, as long as they're paying for the bandwidth. And those worries about having a two-tier internet, well, they're still worries. It's not an imminent threat.
But you can talk to your congressman about it, right?
Yes.
So you absolutely go to last week's show, which is the last show of April 28th, 2006. Miles put up a whole bunch of links about contacting about important issues. One of those links was about this issue. Is that true, Miles?
Yes.
Good. So last week, Miles actually had a computer with him and was able to do that. This week, Drew is being our web page slave.
Our on the fly.
We have one call holding, and I don't know who it is, so I'm just going to take it randomly. Oh, Todd.
I can tell you. This is Todd in Santa Cruz. He's got a question about Macs and viruses.
Hi, Todd.
Hey there. Thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I called you guys about 6 months ago, and I was asking about Mac viruses and,
sure,
you know, downloading the virus protection, and you guys said, don't worry about it, because if there's ever a Mac virus, like, it'll be big news.
We said that?
Yeah, you guys said that. You said, oh, there'll be big news because there's never really been a Mac virus.
Did you hear the show that we talked about Mac viruses? So you need to, after you hear that, you need to listen religiously or you're not following our advice.
It's your own fault.
We had a show, we mentioned about the viruses out for Macintosh.
We did. Hold on, what's your question?
So there was some big news about the Mac viruses. So
sure.
Now do I need to go back to downloading all the virus protection stuff? Or?
Well, there was some big hype.
We even covered it on our show.
Right, there were three Mac Trojans, Trojan horses, that came out within a week's period of time. And none of them were even close to the scale of your average Windows virus or
okay.
Trojan horse that came out.
So our standing policy right now on Macintosh's viruses, Sean doesn't have to do anything because he doesn't have a Mac. And Miles and I, we have virus protection on our machines, right, Miles? But really don't worry about it. So
yeah,
and there are free, we did a site a couple of, on the site a couple of site a couple of shows ago, there is a notation for a free antivirus for Mac OS X, so you might as well throw it on there if you're concerned about
okay.
it.
Do you remember what month
right.
that was?
But the thing is, the people who are making the biggest deal about viruses, Mac viruses, people are saying like, oh, there's going to be Mac viruses. Oh. You look back to where they're coming from, and they're coming from Norton, Symantec, McAfee, the antivirus vendors.
Which all have Mac versions, yeah. So the general thing is, you know, you can be fine not worrying about it, but the best policy to do that is to get a virus protection software. Just don't pay for it at this point. Thank you so much for the call.
Thanks, guys, for clarifying.
You bet. Take care.
Okay, ciao.
All right. The geeks today were Drew Meyer, Miles Elam, and Sean Cleveland. The phone answer, as it is every week, is this wonderful man, Rick Philman, who actually works at Cabrillo College and is a web developer. And thank you, Rick, for being here every week to make
He's an analyst to Cabrillo. Yeah.
He's an analyst. That's
yes,
right.
He is an analyst.
Analyst is that great title that means, ooh, highly intelligent.
And he is, too, which is really cool.
Thank you for participating in GeekSpeak. And thank you for listening to GeekSpeak. To all of those that called in this week, thanks for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services.
Hey, it's clamav.net.
Hang on a second. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. 10 seconds, Drew.
Clamxav.net, Macintosh for your antivirus for your Macintosh. It's free.
And all the links today mentioned on the show will be at geekspeak.org. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, on the web at kusp.org. Next week, we'll cover E3 with our New York correspondent, who'll be down in Los Angeles, Dee Dee Hubbard. Thank you for listening to GeekSpeak. Stay tuned now for Castle College. But first, the Slo County report for KUSP and GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell.